Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining us today. Thanks for hanging around with us. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and she's here to talk to us about what Kiplinger has to say about what's going on in the world these days. Joan, welcome back.
Hello there, Jim.
It's good to have you back.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Pretty excited about it, aren't you?
As always,
like
you know.
Like a dream come true.
If you say so.
Joan, the lead story today is kind of revolves around the port controversy, but the way you guys have framed this, and I like the way you did it, is really paying attention to the macro story here, and that is that there's a lot of foreign investment in the United States. And it's not just people buying stocks and bonds in the United States. It's actually direct capital from other countries in this country into assets that reside in this country.
Right. And I wish I could take credit for this story, and unfortunately I can't. I'll take credit anyway. I like the approach we took because we didn't really deal with the particular controversy. As your listeners, I'm sure, must know by now, there's controversy over a proposed deal for a Dubai company, I think it's called Dubai Ports World, to take over, I guess it was a British company that was managing a certain number, I think about six major U.S. ports.
Right. And not the security of the ports. And I'm not sure Joan, the more I learn about this, I'm not sure that they were managing like the entire port. Were they, or weren't they managing portions of the port?
Well, that I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
The more I learn about it, they're not in charge of security, although they affect security. They could affect security. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, in any case, what we asked the question, how important is foreign investment to the United States? And as you point out, we're not just talking about people buying our securities. We're talking about companies investing in our companies and sort of the broad definition of foreign investment. And so we're not rendering a judgment on this particular deal with this particular country. We're talking about foreign investment in general. And we're pretty much saying that, you know, the United States needs foreign investment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to go away.
That's exactly right. And, you know, Joan, I ask my listeners to do a little experiment several years ago, something that I actually did once in my own area, and that is to pick up the phone and call, you know, let's say you've got 10 industries, 10 different companies. They could be small. Maybe there's only 50, 60 employees. They could be huge. It could be a couple thousand.
Mm-hmm.
Pick up the phone and call those companies, those especially if they're manufacturing companies. Call those companies and ask them who the owner of the company is. And they may give you the name of the company, but but who is your parent organization?
Ah.
When people do that, I think they'll find, they shouldn't be surprised to find if they call 10, that maybe four will have a French owner, a French parent company, or a Swedish parent company, or something like that. A Japanese parent company. There are a lot of companies, and really, Joan, this has been going on for years.
Sure.
For decades, two or three, at least. It's been quite a few. It's happened quite a bit in the last couple of decades, of companies coming in and buying. They'll buy an existing company in the United States.
Yeah, absolutely.
Open up a brand new one. Maybe they'll start a new one.
Right.
There's a Swedish paper company that makes coarse papers, meaning not copy paper, things like that, and tissues and things like that. They're opening up greenfield plants in the United States right now.
See, it's happening in all sorts of industries.
And so tell us let's put some facts and figures to this issue, Joan. The point you guys make is that Is there too much investment? You guys say no. Does the United States need this investment? You guys say we don't have to have it.
Absolutely. No, we say we do. Can the U.S. get along without it?
That's right. Get along without it. We can't. You're right about that, because we do have to have their investment. We've come to depend upon it, haven't we?
No question. Yeah. You'll see from, if you want to talk statistics, we've got a whole bunch in here.
Tell us about some of that.
Well, this is interesting. We say foreign investment in the U.S. this year will outpace, will be higher than $110 billion, which was the level from last year.
That's an amazing figure.
Right.
That number surprised me, too.
Yes, and we also say that foreign investors account for 6% of output. Now, by output, I'm not sure what we mean by that, if we mean GDP or what, but output by the U.S. private sector.
Well, you know, there are two different kinds of G/P, Joan. As you know, we got GDP and GNP.
GNP was the old one that it's still being used.
It's still being used. Gross domestic product is what's created inside the United States
right.
by all firms inside the United States, inside of our borders. Gross
right.
national product includes what the business we do overseas.
Yes, right.
That's my understanding. But this is a big number. You know, one of the things that you guys report, Joan, that I think is so important is how the foreign investment in this country, not only does it create lots of jobs,
right.
not only do we get a lot of capital into this country that benefits this country, that raises the standard of living of our nation, but it contributes significantly to the trade balance. Because a lot of the products we make here are sold to their customers, these foreign companies' customers in other parts of the world, or goes back to their country.
Right. Affiliates of non-U.S. businesses tend to send a lot of merchandise to their parent companies abroad. That's very true.
Mm-hmm. Very important. These companies, and Joan, to me, this is the good side.
Your love give me such a thrill, but your love.
We're back. It's 23 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Hope you'll subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there, and our blog. Check all those things out. Check out the archives and the articles and all the things that we have there for free at our website at smallbusinessadvocate.com. Joan Pride is there. She's well represented in our brain trust, especially in the archives of all the shows that we've done with her in the past. Joan, one of the things you guys point out, and I think this is a very critical and important point to make. I'm glad you make it. And I'm just going to read it to you.
Sure.
Some of the less lucrative niches that U.S. companies have abandoned have been picked up by other companies in other parts of the world.
And gee, what would those include?
One of them, you guys very quickly point out right under that, are management of the ports.
Oops.
Apparently, this is something that U.S. companies don't want to do much of. Maybe we're not good at it. Maybe we don't know that much about it. I don't know. But we have to remember, Joan, that the controversy over the United Arab Emirates Dubai firm that's about to take over half a dozen of our ports is actually buying the assets, apparently, of another foreign company, a British company.
That's right.
That was managing these ports.
That's right.
So the port management is one of those niches that apparently U.S. companies don't want to do. There are others, aren't there?
Yeah. Well, absolutely. We're saying that they're moving in to these areas when U.S. operators either go out of business or decide to go into other areas.
Well, exactly. And you know, another thing, Joan, that's happening, and I think it's a kind of a flight capital out of those countries. A lot of these European companies are not prospering. They're not faring well in their own country because
right.
of the employment laws that they have mm-hmm. in those countries. And so they can actually come over here, believe it or not, and be more successful, I think, on our soil, operating their plants, doing their work, with U.S. firms, with U.S. employment, than they can in their own countries.
And I guess unionism isn't so much of a factor here.
Not as much anymore.
Oh, okay.
Not
That's
like it was.
Yeah.
And because it's the reason, the purpose of a union is basically gone. Companies don't abuse their employees anymore. Companies pay fair wages. Companies are not, you know, they don't need the unions to protect the employees like they did maybe, say, in the 30s or 40s or something like that. So, really, in my opinion, there's no need for unions in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And the country will be better off when they're all gone. And I know that makes some people don't like me to say that, but that's how I feel. Joan, let's move over. And let's talk about retail. The reign of the supermarket is nearly over. Tell us what's going on.
Well, it's sure true in my area.
Yeah. Find a supermarket nearby, huh?
Boy, they're fighting each other to the death, and you have more coming in, and you have a lot of boutique stores. But the point here that we're making is, this is interesting. By next year, supermarkets are going to claim less than half of all food sales.
Yep.
That's kind of amazing.
I guess Walmart's not considered a supermarket, huh?
Well, that's exactly the point, and it's kind of funny because supermarkets are going through what department stores went through a decade or two ago.
Yep.
Because they're getting squeezed on one end by the Walmarts and other, you know, big box discounters who are bringing in groceries, but they're also being caught on the other end by what I would call boutique and gourmet stores.
Yep.
Like, we have a chain around here called Whole Foods Market, mm-hmm. which is very high end and also very, I guess, health food conscious, and they're just eating the lunch of the supermarkets.
Well, and Joan, remember the barbell effect we talked about with the banks?
Yes.
We said that in the future you'll have big banks on the one end, little banks on the other end, and middle banks not so much in the middle.
Right.
And so that's what you're describing, is more and more the food sales are going to the big banks on one end. I mean, the big super
maybe the banks
super
too. I don't know.
Exactly. Well, Walmart wants to get in the banking business.
That's true.
But there'll be all the big discounters on the one end, and the boutique guys on the other end. The regular market supermarkets, not so much in the middle.
Right. That's right.
And that's a very, for me personally, Joan, that's a very unfortunate situation, because I like a good supermarket in my area. I don't like to shop at Walmart, and you can't get everything you need at the specialty shops.
But and the plus, funny thing is,
and they're pretty expensive. Everybody can't afford to shop at the specialty shops like you do, Joan,
because mm-hmm.
they're so expensive, right?
Okay, I'm going to go now. The supermarkets themselves put small grocery owners out of business, though. I've seen that in places where I've lived.
That has happened.
So it's kind of ironic that the supermarkets are getting squeezed.
No, you're right. It's a tough world out there, isn't it, Joan?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lay awake at night feeling sorry for the supermarkets at all.
No, I'm not feeling sorry for them. I just wish that we had more of them. But you know, Joan, there's another issue that you guys didn't cover. I'm surprised to see in your piece here, is how the culture has affected supermarkets. How the way our culture has gone has affected supermarkets. The way we buy food, why we buy food for preparation. And we'll finish this up when we come back after these messages and move on to the weather. I talked about weather and globalization a minute ago. We're actually going to talk about the weather right after these messages. 29 after. I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Celebrating 8 years as radio's small business superhero, he's a syndicated radio host, syndicated columnist, author of two books, and all-around nice guy.
He's everywhere! He's everywhere!
The most fantastic crime fighter the world has ever known.
He's Jim Blasingame, the small business advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after. Thanks very much for joining us. Thanks for hanging around with us. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. You've been listening well. You know what that makes you. That makes you a highly intelligent individual. And the more you listen to Joan Pride, the smarter you get. That's what I've always said. Right, Joan?
Yes, and you're very humble, too, right?
That's right. I'm Mr. Humble. That's what they call me.
I'm Mr. just Humble listening to the intro.
Here. Yeah, they call me Mr. Humble around here.
Mm-hmm.
Joan, back to this supermarket thing, the retail issue. under the retail topic that you have in this week's letter, this week's Kiplinger letter. I wanted to talk about the culture, the way the culture has changed. Remember, you've lived in Washington for a long time, so that's kind of a funny duck place in the world. But but if you go to Flyover America, Joan, 30 years ago, a lot of little towns had no national chain restaurants. So there were no big restaurants. It might have been a McDonald's or a Burger King or something like that. But
sure, I lived in a town like that growing up.
Okay, there may have been no national chains like we have right now, like we have with the Applebee's and El Charlie's and TGI Fridays and Ruby Tuesdays and places like that. There were none of those things. And the reason was because mom cooked at home, three meals a day probably.
Right.
Right? And at least two meals a day. And so now you go to any little town across America, and there are a lot more local restaurants. There are a lot more fast food places. There are a lot more of the tablecloth type restaurants, the formula restaurants, I call them. And as those have grown, supermarkets have gone down, haven't they?
Oh, no question about it. We're not staying home. We're not cooking and sitting home and eating it anymore.
I mean, think about when you got married, how much of your budget was spent on groceries compared to eating out. I bet that's completely inverted now, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think you're right.
And so you've got supermarkets have really taken it on the chin. That's got to be one of the toughest industries to be in right now.
No. Well, and even the restaurant business isn't that easy, as you probably know.
No. You're right. It's a tough one. But at least that's what the direction the culture is moving in.
True.
And so it's an interesting thing to watch. But I still say, folks, I still like to encourage people, folks, support your local supermarkets. And it's not that I don't want Walmart to be successful. I don't care one way or the other about Walmart. It's just that you know, once the little supermarkets, Joan, are gone, once the local supermarkets are gone, then you know we're sort of at the mercy of places like Walmart.
Yeah, but I got to tell you, we don't have local supermarkets here. They've been killed by the big supermarkets.
So they're already
gone. That's why I don't really like the big supermarkets.
Yeah. When I see supermarket, Joan, I'm not talking about the local little market like was on the corner when you were growing up, you know, all those many years ago, Joan. I'm talking about the Food Lions and places like that. They're not even around anymore.
Oh, they're around here. I mean, they're national.
Yeah, but you're talking about the local
Do you remember
shops.
The old IGAs? Do you know what an IGA was?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. They're a member of the Independent Grocers Association, and they might be called Smiths or Joneses or whatever, but they always had that little IGA logo. I mean, those are the ones that I'd like to see come back.
In a lot of the world, especially across the South, Winn-Dixie was a big chain.
Oh, okay.
You know, and they've recently closed up a bunch of stores, and I saw yesterday in one of the, I think it was in the USA Today, that they are going to close up about 300 more stores across the country.
Oh, no. And they're not being bought out? They're just closing shops?
Closing them up. That's right.
Wow.
Nobody wants to buy them.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I think Walmart is their big nemesis when it comes to that. Because if you go park outside of Walmart, people are coming out of that place with groceries. And you know what, Joan? I don't think they're saving money. I think they think they're saving money. But I have shopped at Walmart. I don't think they're cheaper.
Yeah, it's funny how Walmart works, because around me they don't really have groceries, or they're not hardly
any
groceries.
Oh yeah, no, the super Walmarts have groceries.
Right,
Joan. Let's move over quickly and talk about the weather. There's some new satellite forecasting possibilities coming up this year to be ready for next year, not for 06, but maybe 07. Right,
right? So not for this hurricane season, but for the next hurricane season, and given what we went through last year, this could be really important. And the way we start out this item is by saying 6 hours can make a big difference when a hurricane is coming.
Right.
And that's what we're saying, that this new satellite system could give a few extra hours of warning.
Well, but it's not going to be ready till 07.
Right.
But you guys also report that we may have 10 more tropical storms than usual this year.
Yeah, batten down the hatches.
Another tough hurricane year, folks, according to Kiplinger. And you know they're always right. 20 till, right back after these messages. I'm Jim Blassingame. Here's Van Halen to take us out. back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we come to the time where I like because I get to tell you about how cool Kiplinger is. As I said, folks, Kiplinger doesn't pay me a nickel to say this. I just like telling my audience about good companies, and Kiplinger is one of them. All the products that they offer, the Kiplinger letter, the flagship weekly letter, is the best in the world. Then they've got three biweekly letters, the agriculture, the tax, and the California letter. Those three different biweekly letters that go out. And then they've got a magazine that Joan will tell you about.
You bet. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And it's been out for a long time. It's about as old as I am. It's really, really old. Although I don't remember when the first letter came out, Joan. I don't go
back. Yeah, that's
back
a little older than you,
1923.
I
don't go back that far. But you can find all of these publications, and you can subscribe to them at their website at kiplinger.com. That's just like it sounds, KIPLINGER.com. You can get free stuff there on the site. They've got lots of good information for free. And if you subscribe, you do get access to the back of the website and get to go into some of the research, some of the articles, more in-depth stuff that they have. And I encourage you to do that. You can also find the magazine at Newsday. Number, please.
Right. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
Support a family-owned business, folks, the Kiplinger letters. All their stuff is good. Joan, let's talk about 529 plans.
Yes.
Tell us what those are.
Well, 529 plans are sort of like their savings plans. It's kind of like an IRA account that you can set up in a sense. You're putting money into an account that will pay out tax-free when the person that the money is intended for goes to college, and these are set up by states. They're kind of an offshoot of the older kind of plan known as prepaid plans. Mm-hmm. In a prepaid plan, when your child was young, you'd hand the state some money, and they would guarantee tuition down the road at a state school when the child grew up. But
which we did with our kids.
Right, and those are wonderful. It's just that
they were great.
It only works if you know the child is going to want to go to school in state, and there were other problems with that. But I mean, generally
they were
good.
Now, in our plan, and I'm a little confused about where our plan comes in on this. In our plan, you actually could get if you went to another state, the state would pay the equivalent of the average of a 4-year school in that state to the other state. Anyway, they pay it actually directly to the state school.
Yeah, see, in this new kind of 529, there's no guarantees.
Ah, yeah, see, this was guaranteed. In other words, if the average 4-year tuition was, say, $5,000, let's say, for 4 years, and even if it cost you $20 in the other school, you would get $5,000 from that state.
Yeah, no.
See, but they're not doing that anymore, huh?
No,
no guarantees,
no.
Huh?
These are basically tax-advantaged accounts.
Yeah, so whatever you have, that's how much you can use.
Right, and they have the advantage of not only being federally tax-free, but state tax-free as well, depending
right.
on where you are.
Right.
So they are still a pretty good deal, but I think there's so many of them out there in so many different states that it's really hard to decide which one to pick. And so what we're saying is that there's new regulations that will require brokers to be a little more honest and upfront about the pros and cons of them.
So you actually buy a 529 plan from a broker or a financial planner or somebody like that?
Well, you can, sure.
Yeah. Now, you guys have a website here that can help, or you identify a website.
I've been to this before when I've covered this issue. It's called www.savingforcollege.com.
Savingforcollege.com.
Yes.
And what do we find when we get there, Joan?
Well, gosh, just a wealth of information about all kinds of college savings plans, including 529 plans.
Mm-hmm. So, folks, check that out. If you've got babies and little kids or young teenagers or whatever that you're trying to save for college, this website might help. Savingforcollege.com, and make sure that you know the new rules on the 529 plans if you're in the process of setting one up or if you already have one.
Right.
Joan, let's move over to page 3 and talk about the new majority leader in the Republican majority leader in the House. His name is John Boehner from Ohio?
I believe so, yes.
From Ohio.
And, of course, a Republican since they control the House.
Right. He took over for Mr. DeLay, who stepped down as a result of an indictment in Texas, right?
That's right. And Mr. Boehner was kind of, I wouldn't call him the dark horse candidate, but he really wasn't supposed to win. Roy Blunt was supposed, people expected him to win because he was already in the leadership when he ran for this post. But Mr. Boehner won, to even his own surprise, and we're asking what kind of a job he's going to do. And basically, I think right now he's going right through a baptism by fire because he's got to deal with this whole Dubai port thing that we were talking about.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'll be interesting to see how all this rolls out. And, of course, Mr. Boehner has a different style than Mr. DeLay did, doesn't he?
Well, you know what Mr. DeLay's nickname was.
Tell us, Joan. You like to say it. I know you like to say it.
I love saying it. It was the hammer.
Yeah. Now, what did they mean by that, Joan?
Well, he'd hammer on you if he wanted you to vote a certain way.
You'd wind up with a knot on your head if you didn't
vote. Right. He was the majority whip, but he was really the majority hammer.
But the people that I know who track these things say he got things done
for
the Republicans.
Sure he did.
He was effective, whether you liked his methods or not. And some people didn't like his methods.
Right.
But he
right.
was effective. So Mr. Boehner is a little more of a consensus taker, isn't he? More
right.
of a mediator.
He's more of a mediator, trying to find consensus, bring people together. So he won't have a hammer in his hand. But what'll be interesting to see if his way or less effective.
It will be. And, you know, I still say, Joan, the problem in Washington is the Democrats haven't reconciled the minority. The Republicans haven't figured out how to lead like a majority.
Right.
It's a very, very
true.
Dysfunctional situation, folks. Tintail, I wish somebody would take the lead and act like we're leaders. Tintail, we'll be right back with Joan Price. Stay with us.
One fine day.
It's 7-2. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for staying with us today. We're visiting with our good friend Joan Price, senior editor. Joan, let's move down and talk about, business travel.
All right.
Let's talk about the fact that there are some new air taxi. You guys say that, and this is for people like you, Joan, who are part of the jet set. And by the way, Joan, I read the other day that 10 years, more and more people are going to be like you. They're going to have their own private jet. More and more organizations are going to have jets. And
I know.
Because the prices are coming down. Because that's never been a problem for you.
The skies are going to get kind of crowded,
They're going
I
to
think.
Get crowded. You're probably not going to like that.
Right.
But this is interesting, Joan. Air taxis will become much more affordable at the end of this year after regulators approve new jets that are lighter and more efficient. Now, what? Tell us how an air taxi works.
Well, you're talking about smaller plane and a shorter route.
Yeah.
So, you know, you might need to go somewhere that's hard to get to by car. It takes a while, but if you get on a plane, you get there a lot quicker, but you don't want to go through the hassle of flying a commercial airliner.
Commercial, right. So it's sort of like a little bit like a charter, but not completely like a charter.
Yeah. Now, what I'm wondering is maybe these won't be as prone to terrorism as major commercial airlines. How do you make sure they're safe?
Well, that's a good question. Of course,
because I would think part of the appeal here is not having to wait in the long lines of security at the airport and the hassle
right.
at the airport. So you got two competing things going on here, I think.
Well, and the other thing, Joan, that you guys pointed out, and I'm glad you did, is that it's going to cost about half more than a full coach on a brand name airline. But Joan, here's the thing: this is going to fill a niche, and the reason is because there are companies out there who can't justify their own airplane.
Right.
Because they don't need it that often. And as you know, Joan, you can buy parts of a jet. You can buy, you know, like 25 hours of a jet or something
yes.
like that. But that's flying in your own airplane that you have at that moment in time.
Right.
Like a timeshare.
Like a timeshare,
kind of
right.
Exactly. But this is a little bit less different than that. It's you don't have kind of a commitment. But when you sign up, you do pay a little bit more. It's like a
shuttle bus in the air, kind of,
in a way.
Except the shuttle bus is usually than the taxi on the ground, and it's the reverse in the air.
And I'm sure they will have routes. But, Joan, these regional jets, even though they're smaller and they're more, you know, you can fly a lot of places direct now out of some, you know, not a big airport to another not so big airport. right. with these regional jets, 39 to 50 passengers.
That's true.
I don't mind the space cramp being smaller because I like not having to deal with hubs.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't have to go through Atlanta or Charlotte or Cincinnati.
I'll do just about anything to get a nonstop flight somewhere.
Right. Exactly. It's going to be interesting to see how this happens. And it's to me, it's interesting, Joan, to see how niches are being filled.
Yeah.
And it's a case study for the rest in our own businesses.
Oh, I would think so, sure.
Joan, let's move over and talk about the 2006 economy. How's it doing?
Well, we said it's been blazing. A lot of gains in January. And retail sales have been strong. And even housing starts have been going up. But we're now saying it's to an easy lope.
So I think
we're mixing our metaphors here. First, we're blazing
as
like a fire.
As only you can do, Joan.
Loping like a gazelle.
You're expecting inflation to cool off a little bit.
Yes,
that's
right.
That's good.
Right, but also growth will cool off a bit, too. But maybe that's not all bad.
I think so. But you guys are saying first quarter growth may be around 5%, Joan.
Yeah, that's a little bit hot.
It's pretty healthy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Joan, let's move down. Avian flu.
Sure.
Some news this week, a cat in Germany.
How about that? Yeah. I mean, it's hearing reports, I think it's been in Turkey, and I want to say elsewhere in Europe. I want to say France. Has it been in France?
No, I don't know about France, but it's the H5N1 virus, folks. It's the bad one.
Yeah.
That when it gets in humans is bad, and the mortality rate is still around 50%.
Right, and again, it's still only in the bird population. We're worried about a point where it could jump to the human population, but that hasn't happened yet.
It has jumped to humans, but only from birds.
Right.
Well, the concern is that a human would get it, and then it would morph so that a human could give it to it.
Right. That's right.
That's when we get the pandemic thing going on.
Right, and we haven't seen anything like that in Europe, even jumping to humans yet from birds.
That's
We've seen
problem.
That, I guess, in a couple parts of Asia.
Right. So, Joan, don't handle the birds.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Joan, thanks for being here. Good job.
Hey, thank you, Jim.
We'll
see you next time. Sounds great.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, she's the best. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, each and every one. This program is for you. I'm Jim Blasingame. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.